are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, it's a Tuesday edition of Locked On NBA. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. I'm Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with my co-host, David Ramil, and the Washington Post's Ben Golliver. On today's show, Ben Simmons wants to work with Magic Johnson, Jeremy Lin is headed to Toronto, and Paul George goes off against the Blazers. But let's go to our first game. The Rockets beat the Mavericks 120-104, and while Houston led by double digits for most of the fourth quarter, the drama at the end was whether or not James Harden's 30-point streak would stay alive. With just 20 points when he checked in with about 6 minutes left to play, Harden scored 11 points in the final 2 minutes and 32 seconds to extend the streak to 30 games, and he broke out a big smile when he made that final three-pointer to get him there. Ben, do you have a problem at all with Harden gunning for the streak in a blowout?
No, not at all, because I got to watch the Dallas Mavericks trap him and try to prevent his streak in the middle of this meaningless game when they're kind of in a tank mode right now. Rick Carlisle's breaking out the double teams to try to keep it away from him. It did get a little bit shameless. I think there is a line, but I don't know if they crossed the line in this game. And you know, Harden, I think, has been bothered by his left shoulder. He said it's been banged up. It was getting treatment the last 2 days before Monday night's win, and he's been wearing ice on it, like kind of looks like a mummy after these games. He's wrapped up so heavily, and I do think the burden from carrying Houston throughout that time without both Chris Paul and Clint Capella kind of caught up to him a little bit here. But Chris Paul is back, and I really think that's the story around the Rockets right now. Of course, James Harden's going to be their MVP candidate, their headliner. But to me, the team that really pushes Houston from being a good team to a great team is Chris Paul. You look at his game against the Dallas Mavericks, I think it was 11 assists, no turnovers. I mean, that's the Chris Paul that we've kind of come to know here over these years. And that guy hasn't been around very often this season. To me, he's the single biggest X factor in the entire Western Conference. When you're looking at who could potentially be a sleeping giant in the West, to me, it's Houston. I mean, I think they've made some nice moves here in terms of getting Iman Shumpert. He's a pretty clean fit. Kenneth Faried has given them some pretty good minutes. If there's one team that we haven't really talked about a lot in this sort of post-deadline madness, you know, with Milwaukee and Philadelphia and Toronto getting all this buzz, I do think it's the Rockets. And, you know, we shouldn't be quick to kind of write them out or forget about them.
31 points in all for James Harden. Chris Paul had 17 points in the game. Kenneth Faried's been a really nice addition for them, too. 17 points, 8 rebounds against Dallas. And the Mavericks were really only led by Luka Doncic, who had 21 points, 10 rebounds, and 8 assists in the game. David, what do you think about how Houston's looking post trade deadline and the moves that they made?
You know, they look better, without a doubt. I think that's probably putting it a little mildly, but the reality is I think they look much more like a cohesive unit and not necessarily relying as much on James Harden as they have in the past, although he's been still putting up these gaudy numbers, obviously. But at the same time, to me, they kind of feel somewhat meaningless. And I know, like, I don't have a problem with the stat chasing because I think that's something that we see at some point almost in every game at some level. It's just not nearly as magnified or hyped up as Harden's streak is currently. But at the same time, like, my concern with this Houston team and will always be with this Rockets team is how long can they keep this up? The health of this team seems like such a huge question mark. Like, obviously, that's, you know, understating it, because health is a question for every team at this point in the season and going into the postseason. But I don't know that there's any team that depends so much on the health of its two biggest stars in Paul and Harden, and whether or not Paul can continue the strong play, as Ben mentioned, and whether or not Harden is able to continue playing at this MVP level or will face those same issues, however overstated they might be, about his exhaustion and things of that sort. That, to me, is the biggest concern. So I'm not sure if we're looking at the same team we will become April, and then, of course, going into the playoffs in May and maybe even further down than that. So, I mean, they look strong. They're going to get Clint Capella back at some point. They're going to be a great team, obviously, but I'm not sure how sustainable it is, and that's the biggest concern for me.
It's kind of the same questions we had during the 73-win Warriors season in 2016. Do you gun for the 73 wins? Do you try to break that Bulls record? Because do you want to expend all that energy and effort into doing that during a regular season when really the crown at the end is the championship? And so you kind of have to, like, it's not exactly the same because Houston has really needed James Harden to do that. But now with Chris Paul coming back, as you mentioned, Capella eventually coming back too, like post NBA All-Star game and NBA All-Star break, is Harden still trying to go for that? Because it's now 30 straight games with 30-plus points. It's insane, Ben.
I think we've reached the bottom of the depravity in terms of how their offense looked when Chris Paul was out. Because Paul was back, and he's a guy who, you know, doesn't have a huge usage, but the ball's in his hands a lot, and he really creates a lot of balance for their offense. And he also helps keep Harden's minutes down. If you look at last year, when Harden was not on the court, Houston was plus six because Chris Paul was leading that second unit against other teams' second units and just wiping them off the court. This year, because Paul's been injured so much, they're actually a minus one net rating when Harden's off the court. And so that's why he winds up taking on so much more of a burden. That's why he takes so many more shots, and he's, you know, slow playing all these possessions to kind of pace himself over the course of the game because, you know, frankly, Mike D'Antoni, can't take him out. And I will say this. I mean, D'Antoni is, like, totally unapologetic yeah. about all this. He's like, yeah, it's tough, but, you know, so what? Deal with it. What else do you want us to really do? And it's nice that they're at least honest, you know. They're not pretending that, oh, yeah, you know, we're going to try to pace James. I mean, I don't think that's really their plan. They want to ride him as far as he will take them. You know, one other interesting comment Daryl Morey, made to me today was, he would rather have two elite players who are, potentially injury prone or subjected to injury more often than others, rather than only having one elite player surrounded by very good players. And his point there was, if you're healthy, then you're going to be able to compete for a title. If you don't have the two elite players, you're already basically out of the title conversation. And of course, that's what they want to do is stag banners down there in Houston during James Harden's prime. It's an interesting point. I actually share a lot of David's reservations and concerns about whether they can kind of keep this up and keep the band together. But you can understand what their philosophy is. It's very clearly stated. And we'll see again, you know, if it has a chance to work. Last year, it almost worked. You know, it came down to basically the last game of the Western Conference Finals before it failed. I'm not sure it's going to get that close this year, but I do think this is a team that is being overlooked and slept on. To me, they're just better than the fifth team in the Western Conference, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if they make the Western Conference Finals.
Let's go to our next game. The Raptors beat the Nets 127-125. Brooklyn made 23-pointers in the game, but the pair of former Spurs, Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard, scored the last 5 points in the game to get the win. While it was Kawhi's bank shot with 4 seconds left that won the game, it was the newly acquired Marcus Gasol that helped give the Raptors a boost in that fourth quarter, David.
Yeah, I mean, what we expected as far as Gasol's contributions, you know, a significant improvement over Jonas Valanciunas. As beloved as he was by that Raptors fan base, I think you can't overstate the impact that Gasol has with his passing. Obviously, he's just such a great playmaker, such a creator for others, and that was really on display tonight. And I think that's the missing piece there, that their front court has been great at times, but, you know, inconsistent as well. Serge Ibaka, you're never quite sure what you're getting out of him. Valanciunas wasn't really making a huge impact, but a guy like Gasol, he's not the same player he was a couple seasons ago when he was a defensive player of the year, making those kind of, you know, huge games in Memphis. But at the same time, he can still contribute at a very high level. And he pushes this ceiling for a Raptors team that has its own doubts, of course, as they always have. Whether or not, you know, they can reach the Eastern Conference Finals, still a question mark. But at least their chances are significantly improved with Gasol's addition.
Yeah, All-Star D'Angelo Russell had a great game, too, for Brooklyn. 28 points. And 14 assists, and had a big three-pointer at the end that gave the Nets a 125-122 lead that ultimately Danny Green and Kawhi overcame. Joe Harris and Allen Crabbe were on fire. They combined for 13 of 18 from three-point range. But the Raptors, they scored almost half of their points, 60 of their 127 points in the paint. I mean, they only made 9 three-pointers compared to 20 again for the Nets. But when the long ball isn't falling, get to the rim. And that's what they did. Now, despite the loss, the Nets still have a comfortable hold on the sixth spot in the East. They just took the number 2 seed in the East to the wire. They have Caris LeVert back. I just think things are looking pretty good for Brooklyn, again, despite the loss. Should Ben Simmons be allowed to work with Magic Johnson over the offseason? We've got headlines coming up next. Let's get to our first headline. Lakers president and Hall of Famer Magic Johnson told reporters over the weekend that Ben Simmons had reached out to the team to see if the two could get together over the offseason so that Simmons could get advice about playing in the NBA as an oversized point guard. On Monday, 76ers general manager Elton Brand told a Philadelphia radio station that he shot down the idea. No. Now the NBA, according to ESPN, is investigating to see if the situation qualifies as tampering. Ben, should the Sixers let Simmons work with Magic? Is this that big of a deal?
Well, isn't it time for Magic to resign as Lakers president so he can take the job as president of basketball operations for Clutch Sports? I mean, isn't that the natural evolution here so he can really get into his role as a recruiter? I kid, but not really. I mean, you know, like I feel like the parts of the job that inspire Magic the most, that really get him up in the morning, that get his blood going, that get him excited, are the parts of the jobs that are just completely not allowed by NBA regulations that he continually gets dinged for with these fines over the years. It's a very awkward, strange situation. I like to make light of it because there's no simple answer here. Magic Johnson is one of the most famous, most influential, most important basketball players of all time. He is the kind of person who you want representing the league to its best capacity, but he's also this ruthless competitor who wants to remake the Lakers in his own image of, you know, showtime and stars and big time production value and celebrity and all of that. And he does not care at all about the NBA's little petty rules and regulations protecting small market teams players, right? I think if I was Philadelphia, I think the right thing to do is to politely decline. And then step two is to narc him straight to the NBA league office because, there's already been questions about, okay, what is Philly's long-term fit with this core? Can they pay everybody? Does it make sense for Ben Simmons to spend his whole career with Joel Embiid? You know, the superstar duo with one guard and one big. I mean, that's like the oldest story in the league, right? It never works. They always break up. One of them always seeks, you know, greater fame and fortune somewhere else. And so, yes, they should be very protective in that situation if they're the Sixers. I thought Elton Brand handled it very well with his public comments. I'm curious what you guys think. I mean, didn't he strike the right tone here, measured, not panicky, but still firm in terms of defending Ben Simmons?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds fine. And I like that Elton's handled the GM role better than a lot of people had questioned whether or not he could. But at the same time, my overall issue is with what tampering is and how it's defined by the league. Because I feel like most of the rules that qualify as quote-unquote tampering were probably created when the only form of contact was a rotary phone at some point when there were only eight teams in the league. And nowadays, with players being able to interact as much as they can, and we've heard players, we've all talked to players who refer to the fraternity, the brotherhood of the NBA, players from bygone eras, including guys like Magic, who just happen to have an active role in today's league. It's like, you know, they feel this close, familiar relationship. They're always going to talk to one another. You can't monitor this, and it feels kind of, there's a little bit too much of I don't want to use the terminology, but it's a little bit too controlling for my taste as to whether or not you can tell a player who to talk to. And that Magic happens to be an executive for a rival team. I don't think it really makes so much of a difference. I think they're going to continue to talk. You can tweet at one another. You can Instagram one another. You can contact each other via text. There's so much that you cannot monitor. So why bother having these rules at all? Because honestly, I don't know that any team, small market or no, is being protected. So I just feel like...
But David, aren't you a little worried, though, that Ben Simmons is going to show up at the gym for a workout with Magic and there's going to be, like, 50 girls and a celebrity TV show and maybe a Rolls Royce that with his, like, personalized license plate on the court for him? I mean, isn't there some level of slippery slope possibilities here if we're allowing, rival executives unfettered access to superstars?
Not maybe. As long as I'm allowed to cover it. I don't mind that at all.
So you guys have a dog in the fight, though, because Pat Riley would be an expert at this too, wouldn't he? Like, if we just remove all the tampering rules, I mean, are you guys trying to get a leg up here for your hometown guy, Miami, tampering Pat Riley?
He used to be an expert at it. It hasn't worked out very much lately. Look, I kind of think we bring up all the tampering rules and stuff, but I think the reason why, like, everybody's doing it, right? Like, they're the most bogus rules that exist in the NBA, but I think other front offices are just like, Magic is being so showtime about all the tampering. Like, he's going on late night shows and being like, hey, Paul George, come on. And like, he's a proven tamperer in the public eye. And I just think that there's a lot of front offices are like, yo, like, we don't have an issue with you tampering. We just don't want you tampering like this.
And, keep your backroom dealings in the back room as opposed to making it public.
Okay. Exactly. And I just think like they're kind of side-eyeing him and just being like, dude, like, just calm down. Like, just do it how we've all been doing it. Like, there's no reason to have your client publicly issue a statement to demand a trade. Just do it like everybody else demands a trade, and just, you know, eventually it'll leak. But hopefully it doesn't even get to that point. So I just think that's really the issue.
Can I tell you guys a funny story? So I actually did a sit-down interview with Magic Johnson for the first time in mid-January, and it wasn't related to any of this stuff. We were talking about all these different topics, and he actually had – it was lined up through like a third-party company, and he was sponsoring for. And they actually had somebody sitting on the interview – who was sort of like that assistant coach who's in charge of pulling Sean McVay back away from the field. Every time that Magic would, you know, bring up, or like I would ask a question about a player or ask him to compare something, and he might mention a player's name, this assistant would like pipe up and say, Magic can't answer that. And Magic would just regularly overrule the person and say like, oh, it's LeBron James, he's my player, I can answer it. Oh, it's a question about Michael Jordan, he's retired, I can answer that. And he just kept overruling the person. And honestly, like as he was doing it, I was just like thinking it was the funniest thing. But I also was listening to see if he would actually tamper, and he didn't. Like, we were having a very open and kind of, you know, quick back and forth dialogue, and he did seem like he understood what the rules are. So this is not ignorance. If anyone thinks, oh, Magic's right, just right. being, you know, right. silly, Magic knows those rules better than anyone. Let's just put it that way.
It's not ignorance. He's just ignoring them.
Yeah, exactly. That's the funny part is that everybody kind of dismisses him, you know, thinking he's dumb or blatantly ignoring these rules. But he knows exactly what he's doing. He's manipulating them the way he can, and he's getting away with it too. So.
Next headline, Jeremy Lin is finalizing a contract buyout with the Hawks and is expected to sign with the Toronto Raptors, according to ESPN. David, that should help replace Fred VanVleet, who will be out at least 3 weeks with a thumb injury, as we just learned. Jeremy Lin, pretty nice addition there.
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, I don't think it's moving the needle all that much. He's going to provide some spot minutes there. You know, I think the Raptors fan base is kind of excited because they've struggled so much to lure any kind of player in the, you know, buyout market in the past. I saw a tweet about that. I can't remember from whom now, kind of listing a rogues gallery of other players they've signed in the past. Not really, again, contributing much in that sense. But Jeremy Lin, you know, a pretty big name, a guy who should fit in there and can still, you know, if not play at a huge high level, he could still contribute. He's got a nice floater and everything else. He's got a nice pick and roll game. It'll work there, and I think he can have some nice minutes, but he's not the difference maker in the Eastern Conference. He's not going to be the guy that carries them to any significant win or anything like that, but still good to have that kind of depth in there, especially as the rest of the teams in the Eastern Conference at the top of the East in particular have bolstered their rosters.
Yeah, is there symbolic value to this move? I mean, is that really the big takeaway? It's
yes.
Like, there's a message being sent to the fan base, a message being sent to Kawhi, a message being sent to you know, Kyle Lowry. It reminds me a little bit of the Gasol move. It's like Gasol was the real kind of power move. Hey, guys, we're in this thing. We're going for it. And then maybe Jeremy Lin like underlines that just one more time for everybody who's paying attention.
Yeah, and look, I do actually think he'll help a little bit in the playoffs. Like I said, he's a veteran ball handler. He knows how to create plays. He's got playoff experience. Look, DeLon Wright was solid, but I still think I trust Lin a little bit more in a playoff setting. He could drive and kick out to Toronto's three-point shooter. He's comfortable sharing the floor with other high-usage players, as we've seen throughout his career. So I like the fit. I think it's a good pickup to add depth, especially on the heels of the Marc Gasol trade. This was sort of the move. And as you mentioned, like, these are the things that teams that are gunning for an NBA Finals appearance do. Like, they go on the buyout market, they make these kinds of moves, and as we've seen in the playoffs over the last few years, sometimes these guys actually do end up kind of swinging a game one way or the other. So you might as well have the guy on the roster, especially, again, when you've lost so much depth after that big Marc Gasol trade.
Hey, can I ask you a question real quick on the Gasol trade? How do you guys see those minutes shaking out, or his role shaking out? I know he played pretty well tonight, you mentioned, but just real quick, like, you know, once the playoffs hit and they're matched up with Boston, or they're matched up with Philly or Milwaukee, like, do you have a real sense for how they're going to break those minutes up?
I think the number one thing for them is less about who's better and more about, like, who can handle being on the bench better. I think that there's going to be some ego management there, because ultimately, I'm not sure it really matters who's starting as long as everybody's just, like, copacetic and just everybody's happy, because you don't want to screw up what the season has already been for Toronto. So even if you have to bring Marc Gasol off the bench, even though I think we'd all agree he's a superior player, I don't think it's going to matter, because by the time you get to the playoffs, what they ought to do is make it by matchup, by series. Like, I think Ibaka makes more sense in a series against Boston because he gives you some rim protection against a guy like Kyrie Irving and their other slashers. But then against the Sixers, I'd rather have Marc Gasol starting because you want him matched up against Joel Embiid because what he can do defending Embiid in the post. So just everything, just make sure everything's kumbaya by the postseason and then just go match up that way.
That sounds about right.
That's really well said. I mean, one advantage of having Nick Nurse, too, is he's kind of experimented with the lineups along the way, and he's a little bit unconventional. So I think in past years, every time that Dwayne Casey made a lineup move, like, their whole fan base freaked out because it's like, oh, we're doing this, we're adjusting. Like, the adjustments were so telegraphed. I do think they can be a little bit more subtle here, like you're mentioning, changing your lineups for matchup purposes. I also think, let's shout out Serge Ibaka, who's had a really nice year for them. I mean, to me, he was a fringe all-star type candidate. I like when he's playing the five. He's been at his best this season playing the five. So I don't know if you necessarily want to start him, but I do think you want to finish a lot of games with him, and that lineup has performed really well for them. So I guess I'm just kind of eyeing that entire situation in terms of how do those minutes shake out. Is Gasol okay with not having a huge role? Is he okay with not starting? And then maybe when do they flip those lineups for matchup purposes like you mentioned?
I like the shout out to Serge Ibaka. We've got our Locked On Line of the Night coming up after this break. Before we get to our Locked On Line of the Night, let's check in on the other scores from Monday, David.
In the game nobody watched, the Cleveland Cavaliers beat the New York Knicks 107-104. The Pistons continued their incredible playoff push, 121-112 with a win over the Washington Wizards. The Pacers, without Victor Oladipo still, 99-90 over the Charlotte Hornets. The Milwaukee Bucks led the Chicago Bulls 112-99. The Minnesota Timberwolves 130 over the Clippers 120. Oklahoma City Thunder behind an incredible triple-double from Paul George over the Portland Trailblazers 111. And the Miami Heat drop a one to the Denver Nuggets 103-87.
It's time for our Locked On Line of the Night. Some good options to pick from. Lou Williams put up 45 points in the Clippers loss. Andre Drummond had 32 points, 17 rebounds. Brad Beal, 32 points and 10 assists. Westbrook broke Wilt Chamberlain's record with 10 straight triple-doubles, but the Locked On Line of the Night goes to the other guy with the triple-double, Paul George, who sizzled with 47 points, 12 rebounds, and 10 assists in that win over Portland. Ben, Paul George has put together a pretty strong MVP case, as the Thunder have now won 9 of their last 10.
I'll be the first guy to admit it. I never thought Paul George was ever going to be as good as he's been this year. You know, I saw him in person the other day. He looks like he's trimmed down a little bit from past years. I mean, he looks real lean and mean. He's moving so well around the court. The confidence in his shot is absolutely crazy. There's no question that he's a top three MVP candidate right now. I think you can make strong arguments for him and also for Giannis. Did you mention my guy Giannis, by the way, in your box score rundown? Because he had a 29-17-8 night. I don't want people to forget that, even though it came against the Chicago Bulls.
Was it a triple-double, so I didn't qualify. Sorry, man.
Two assists shy from mattering. I see how it is.
So as far as Paul George is concerned, like, it's so interesting. Obviously, he's statistically the team's best player by far, and he's obviously doing it offensively and defensively. He's been a great player both ways. But, you know, the question with him has been for so long, or has dogged him for so many years now, whether or not he's a quote-unquote leader, and obviously that's a huge debate, but do you think he's more comfortable handling a kind of a secondary role to Russell Westbrook being the team's personality versus and just allowing him to focus on the floor and do what he does best as far as his production on the court?
I think everybody, or at least a lot of people, owe Paul George an apology for bashing his decision to not join the Lakers or to stick with the Thunder, because I think he understood exactly what Russell Westbrook brought to the table better than any outsiders could. And I'm stunned to hear myself say those words, but that's how it's playing out. They've got an unbelievable superstar dynamic. You look around the league, that's like become a huge competitive advantage. Like, do you want to play with a grumpy guy like Kevin Durant if he's going to leave next year? Is he not? Kyrie Irving, is he going to leave? What's he going to do? The guys in Boston are miserable. The interpersonal dynamics between your best players are going to be what separates the great teams from, you know, the potential title winning teams. And I'm not quite sure if Oklahoma City's on that level, but they have come so close to maximizing their full capabilities this season. And a large part of it is because Paul George doesn't feel like he has to be the leader, get every single interview. He's okay with Russell Westbrook getting a lot of attention, making lots of headlines, you know, chasing his own statistical accomplishments, and vice versa. And we got to give Russell Westbrook some credit here, too. Did you guys see this turn from him coming? Him being okay, not shooting the most shots every single night, mm-hmm. setting up Paul George, using his passing ability more often, deferring at times, especially late in games to Paul George in a way that he, you know, really didn't even defer to Kevin Durant. You know, this regularly early in his career, I never saw it coming. And that growth from both of them, you love to see it. I just love when players who are 25, 26, 27 and older continue to add meaningful elements to their game. And both those guys have done that this season.
And that's kind of the thing. Like, you talk about the relationship between the star players. That relationship has to be beneficial for both of them. They've got to make each other better. We saw, and that's sort of what the 76ers are going to have to go through now. It's what the Warriors have gone through with like a guy like Draymond Green being okay with taking five shots a game as long as he gets to, you know, pass out of the post and play great defense every once in a while. As long as they go small a couple minutes a game, he's good with it. And so Paul George and Russell Westbrook, they've been able to feed off of each other, learn from each other, tweak their own games to better suit being on the floor with the other star. And so it's been really good for them. And Oklahoma City, you look at what they've done lately and how they're playing, and they're getting contributions from guys like Jeremy Grant and Terrence Ferguson. They're playing really well. You kind of look in that Western Conference, obviously the Warriors are the top team, but it's kind of unclear who the second team is. And we've talked about that all season. And right now, OKC is kind of, they're the latest and greatest as far as how things go in the West. But just to go back to Paul George's MVP case, I mean, his numbers are insane. He's developed into an extremely efficient scorer, as we talked about. He's probably playing the best perimeter defense more consistently than anyone else in the league. We already knew he was a Defensive Player of the Year candidate. Shout out to Shane Young, who tweeted out this statistic. Paul George is on pace to make 317 three-pointers this year. That has only been done twice before this season. Both times it was Steph. Harden's going to get there this year too. But basically what we're seeing from Paul George is kind of the ultimate version of a 3-and-D player, right? And you kind of say 3-and-D role player, and you kind of just think of a role player, but he is just like the ultimate version of that. I think he's clearly distanced himself now from the pack. He's closer to Giannis and James Harden as far as an MVP goes, than he is to the Kawhis, the Durants, the Stephs. I think Durant, Steph, they've been great. They're going to split votes. I think right now Harden, Giannis, and Paul George should be the top three in whatever order on everybody's MVP ballot.
That's an interesting argument. So you think Paul George is their third best candidate to behind Harden and Giannis just because of what they were able to accomplish earlier in the season, that maybe where Paul George was kind of overlooked a little bit in Oklahoma City?
I think he's been overlooked this entire season, and it takes crazy games. Like these are, that 47-point triple-double that he just had is a moment. Like, these are the kind of things that get you on people's radars, and now people are going to sort of look back and say, oh man, he's actually having a really great year. We got to take this guy seriously.
It gets more and more real, you know, week by week for him, the longest he does it, because I think in the back of our minds, collectively, we're all thinking, oh well, Paul George has never shot this well, so he's going to cool off. He's going to have that month-long drought, you know, that we've seen, you know, the inopportune moments where he goes cold, like in last year's postseason, for example. That's what we've been conditioned to expect from him. And it really just, you know, hasn't happened. I mean, you mentioned the consistency factor. You know, it's there on both ends. You know, the Rockets, you know, I've been spending the last couple of days around them. They're like, nobody guards Harden better than Paul George one-on-one in the entire league right now, Kawhi included. It's like, okay, well, that is, you know, no small, you know, praise when you're looking at the grand scheme of those two teams maybe facing off in the playoffs. I want to ask you guys, I mean, if we can get Thunder Rockets, I mean, is that not one of the very top playoff matchups that we want to see at this point?
Without a doubt. That sounds like it would be immensely fun. Steven Adams, Capella matchup, that would be really great. Westbrook against former teammate James Harden. I mean, that would be, and to see that Paul George being able to lock down or at least hinder. And now the other thing about that, though, is then it opens up all those questions regarding Harden's durability and whether or not he's able to actually maintain this in the playoffs. Because if Paul George just does an excellent job on him defensively, and at that point it would be after the MVP vote's already taken place, isn't that right? So even if the award hasn't been given out, the voting would already have taken place. But it would just I think it would open up a Pandora's box there that I'm not willing to see open.
Yeah, we'd be in a debate purgatory. It'd be great. I love it. You know, because whatever happens, we'd have to like put it on pause for 3 weeks until we find out the real results.
I just want to go back to something really quick, David. When Ben asked you that question about the Rockets Thunder matchup, that was very on brand of you to skip right over Russell Westbrook, Paul George, James Harden, Chris Paul, and all those guys, and go right. And the first matchup you mentioned was Clint Capella versus Steven Adams. Very proud of you. That was right on brand. That was perfect.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's all we have for today. Thanks for subscribing to Locked On NBA. If you like us, leave us a rating and review on iTunes. And remember, when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On NBA. We'll be back here next Tuesday. You can catch us over at Locked On Heat for the rest of the week. Thanks to Ben Golliver for jumping on. Make sure to check out his work over at the Washington Post. And thanks for listening.